Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am joined by Martin Reptilian Willis.
It shows?
Yeah.
I was doing some shape-shifting a little bit.
So. Oh, see, I tricked you.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were reptilian, and I pretended like I did, you know, that old trick. And then you're how did you know? And it reveals your secret that you are. So you're reptilian.
Well, no, absolutely not.
What's with this? Because all of my ex-coworkers were accused of being reptilian. That's why they all were so summarily dismissed. Just kidding. And now you're a reptilian too. What is, why, you know, to be honest though, if this is true, the reptilians aren't so bad.
No, I'm more like a turtle anyway.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
Yeah.
That's cute. That's an amphibian, I think. But, yeah, that's very cute. Okay.
Oh, well, I think you're right. Amphibian, reptilian, amphibian.
Yeah.
Well, maybe.
So let me tell you about our guest. He's a tortoise sort of creature. Because it's you, we're going to do UFO news roundup show. Surprise.
Right.
So the listeners will know, you know, this is something that I do, well, with Jason and or with Lee Spiegel once in a while. And we'll have to do this with Lee sometime soon even because, you know, Lee likes to rant about whatever he's written about, which is always some fun stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But I figured because it would be good anyway. I've been wanting to do a UFO kind of so we can talk at length more about the UFO news that's happened. And what's great is, you know, I was scrambling this morning to get the UFO news, the headlines up, because we put up daily headlines in the mainstream. And there are some interesting headlines this morning. So I figured that's what we could talk about at first. So people kick back and relax, because Martin and I are going to get you caught up with all the news. And we're going to rant and rave about, you know, what we think about some of the news. And we'll probably get pretty ridiculous. You will.
Sounds good.
Ready?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so first of all, I just posted these headlines, so of course, I think you've been able to read the titles, but that's as far as your knowledge of these stories goes, because I just posted them myself. But some pretty interesting stuff, and I figured it would be a good place to start. In particular, I guess this first one is Tom DeLonge. This is a story in a website called Hacked. But Tom DeLonge, who, you know, was a previous frontman for the band Blink 182, but I guess he left, and there are rumors he left because he wanted to do UFO stuff and they didn't or something. I don't know. This is total rumor, so I'm not saying that that's definitely what happened. But he's into UFOs, and I guess he's doing a movie of some sort or documentary, some kind of videoing he's doing, and it says that. The title of this story is ex-Blink 182 member Tom DeLonge about to expose UFOs with the president and NASA? And he has tweeted something along the lines of saying that, you know, he's spoken with Obama about UFOs.
Really?
So it looks like this picture they show, he's released a little bit of info and a picture of him you know, in some official-looking place, almost looking like the White House. He's in D.C. doing – at one point he's got his arms up kind of like he's waving his arms around or something. But, yeah, in one of the tweets of the pictures that he put up, he just says it's space-related. And it says in this tweet, this picture of it looks like an interview with John Podesta. Yes, the president and I discussed unidentified aerial phenomena.
Do you, you know, I like him. You know, I like what he's written before. But do you think this is really possible that he's actually talked to the president?
I don't know. You know, it's entirely, I guess it's possible. I would be awfully surprised. Of course, the president doesn't do many interviews. And if there are interviews, you know, they are well planned out,
right,
you know, in advance. So it looks like he is interviewing John Podesta. John Podesta, you know, I'm sure many of our readers or listeners will remember who he is. He is he runs the Center for Progress, American Progress, I think it was called. Anyways, it's more of a liberal think tank. He helped with the Obama transition into the White House, and then now has become an advisor, an official senior advisor for Obama. And he is into UFOs. He used to work for Clinton, and he had talked about UFOs there. He was part of a press conference with James Fox and Leslie Kane, where he talked about how UFO secrets need to be revealed. You know, it's the law kind of thing, he said. So this is a UFO buff who continues to be discuss UFOs or mention UFOs. So could they have bumped in the hallway and Tom DeLonge asked Obama? I don't know. Of course, Jimmy Kimmel, in a very public way, you know, on television, interviewed Obama about UFOs, and he kind of made fun of the whole thing. So I'd imagine he would do that again. But it's an interesting claim.
It really is. And, yeah, I mean, you would think something like this, you'd hear about it. You know, like you said, he
right.
does only a few interviews. And, you know, this wouldn't be in a public venue. You know, perhaps he spoke with him personally. I mean, that, like you said, may have bumped into him or whatever.
Yeah.
But for him to ask that right off the bat, well, I guess Jimmy Kimmel did, but without any, you know, precursor to knowing exactly what was going to be asked, you know, that would be really unusual.
It would be. So it'll be interesting, and I'm sure people are hoping that he caught Obama off guard, and Obama was like, what? Oh yeah, the UFOs, we have them at Area 51. Oh, no, oh, I wasn't supposed to say that. And then Tom DeLonge's running out of the White House with the footage. Ha-ha, you can't catch me. So I'm sure that's what people are hoping happened, but most likely not. Either way, if Tom DeLonge did get an interview with Podesta about this, I think that would make news. But, of course, it would be even bigger news, and it'll be like the Kimmel thing, one of our two-day huge news things, because the cycle, news cycle, if a story is in the news cycle for 2 days, it's a big deal. If
right.
it's in the news cycle for a couple hours, it's pretty big. But this might garner some more news, if indeed he did do this. When the project is coming out is unknown, so we'll see what's going on here.
All right, so do you think that he's making this claim saying that this is part of his movie project?
Yeah,
talking
I think
to
so.
Obama?
Yeah, because he says in the tweet is, yes, the president and I discussed unidentified aerial phenomena, ... And then his hashtag is one of the longest hashtags I've ever seen, which probably takes up most of the 140-whatever characters in his tweet. But it says, hashtag important film on something about space.
Huh. About that. So
yeah.
that must be the title of his project, perhaps? Working title, maybe?
Probably maybe a working title, because he does have, yeah, another tweet of a picture of him in Washington interviewing somebody, and he uses that hashtag again. And then he says, in that picture of him kind of looking like he's doing some weird stuff in front of in D.C., it says, using my mind to project the excitement that I have from my week taking meetings in D.C. about hashtag stuff you can't know, hashtag NASA. And at one point he had also tweeted his guest pass, visitor pass at NASA headquarters. So
down in at Goddard?
I'm not sure. Let's see if it says. It doesn't say.
Hmm. I was there last week, by the way.
Is that considered NASA headquarters?
I don't think so. It's where they do mostly like the satellites. They're working on the James Webb,
mm-hmm.
you know, telescope to replace the Hubble. The Hubble is, you know, the missions to the Hubble are worked out there. And yeah. But it was really a great experience. I was there for a private tour, so it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, so I'm not sure. That was on the 20th. He tweeted that NASA tag, and it says NASA headquarters. The next day is when he started tweeting his D.C. stuff.
I was there on the 21st.
Yeah, So you could have seen him running around there.
Yeah, right in Maryland.
Yeah. So we'll see. I don't know. Some people may know that Jason and Maureen, who used to work for Open Minds, are writing for his website about the paranormal. Oh. Mm-hmm. But Jason and Maureen, unfortunately, and it's to be honest, it's I made me a little frustrated over the years. They're so secretive about everything that they do that they haven't shared anything with me on anything regarding anything to do with Tom DeLonge for ever. So, so I don't have any more insight. I know some people would ask, well, what about them? What have they said? And I don't know. They haven't said anything. So Who knows? But it's entirely possible that they don't know much. They may. I don't know. Go on their Facebook or Twitter and ask them and see what they have to say. But it looks really interesting. Kind of exciting.
Yeah, it must be great to have that kind of backing, your own personal backing from being in a major band to kind of, you know, follow your passion, do whatever it is that really, you know, gets you excited about life, and be able to do it financially. So good for
him. No kidding. I know. Yeah, that would be great. And it's good that, you know, well, actually, that's the advantage I have here because my boss is one of those people. He's made money somewhere else so he can explore this field. And, you know, contrary to some of the skeptics' belief, there's no money to be made in this field. I shouldn't say no. There's some money to be made, but not enough money to cover your expenses. So You're not going to, you know, come ahead in the positive. Some people do, I'm sure. Actually, if we did only the UFO Congress and I was the only staff member, maybe we would be able to be profitable. But that would be, you know, or maybe if we had a couple people and we were part-time, we might be profitable. But that would be about it. And otherwise, maybe some of the guys doing TV shows are profitable. But even then, you know, unless you have a big show, I'm sure I'm guessing that Tsoukalos of Ancient Aliens does okay because he's a producer and a talent. But lots of times the talent, you know, they don't pay very much, if anything. So it's not like something they can live on off of. And if it's a big show, they can't have another job. And Hangar One, I don't think they pay practically anybody.
I've heard this over and over again, and that's kind of like a misconception of people in this field or people that are observing this field. They think a lot of people do things for the money, and like you said, there's not a lot of money that goes around. You know, you have a discussion with Stan Friedman, and you know he talks about, you know, being on Larry King and how, you know, he had to pay for his own meals, and he did get a hotel room and travel, but that's it. You know, you know, these shows are making so much money, and yet not a lot is shared. And like you say, in general, the UFO field, unless you have really good luck with a book or something like that, you know, you're not going to be making any money. And people are mostly just either squeaking by or have a job on the side.
Mm-hmm.
You are lucky.
Jaime Musan might be making some money. And no doubt at this last event he did, but it's unfortunately because I think people are questioning the ethics related to possibly over-sensationalizing to make that money. And that's unfortunate because that hurts the credibility of the field, you know, the work. But moving on, I guess, to another story that was in the news today that's really interesting. That would be I wanted to talk to you about is this story. I think a lot of people heard about this story of this dead man who was found, and he had this stash of weapons, like this huge mound of weapons. And there's a lady in Oxnard who, it turns out, who was missing for many years, who is related to this, who knew this guy. It turned out she was kind of a, it seems like kind of a cultist, where she joined, like, up with this guy, severed all connections with her family and friends, and so, you know, that's why she was a missing person. But she's since resurfaced, and they've interviewed her about this guy, and she believed this guy, and he said he was an alien hybrid and an alien savior to mankind. And she believed this, and she said he was some sort of secret agent. And the media actually is like, who is this guy? Why did he have all of these weapons? How could he afford all of these weapons? Who's he working for? So they believe that maybe he does have some ties with something, you know, nefarious or secretive. And they're still investigating who the heck this guy was. Yeah, isn't that strange?
That whole story is strange, so strange, and there's 2 tons of ammunition. Mm-hmm. And I think, I can't remember the figure, but I believe it was well over $1 million worth of weapons. And for one person to harbor that many weapons is pretty scary. And I've been to Oxnard. It is, you know, for business, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. And, you know, it's kind of a unusual town. So I could see that fitting in there, you know, that whole thing. But yeah, that's a whole bizarre story for sure.
Yeah, I've been out there too. And I think there's a near a Navy base, or, and it's considered one of the towns, I think, with one of the lower levels of income or something like that in California.
Yeah,
at least it was. I don't know if that's still the case.
Well, there is a drug issue out in that area for sure. And they have actually kind of been hit hard by a real estate drop. It started back in 2008 in that area.
Wow. Mm. But pretty weird. Yeah, his body was found in an SUV. And it's just a really strange story. So that's still developing. But I think what's interesting about this, and it just kind of, you know, is a warning to people in this field, I think, you know, and being someone who has worked in this field for so long, I really warn people, because we see it so much. We see it at our conference, you know, we see it with Greer and with others, that it's dangerous. People, don't give up your entire worldview and belief system to some of these people, many, if not any of them. I actually, frankly, don't believe you should give up your worldview and complete belief system to anybody, you know, because they're all human, they're all fallible, and some of these people are really just working to create kind of a cultish type of situation. They want a large following, and often these large followings are asked to help them, usually financially, and they live off of this. And right. It's dangerous because, you know, these people are corruptible. And I don't mean that. And, you know, I mean, all people are corruptible. Like, you know, the old saying, ultimate power corrupts ultimately. And we've seen this where people kind of can, their egos can go out of control, or the power can drive people mad, where they kind of think they're, untouchable or something, and they do some things that can be very damaging. So just be careful, people. I mean, there may be some interesting stories out there. You may be convinced these people are talking to extraterrestrials, these guys are talking to the real ones. That's great. And even if you believe that, that's wonderful. But that doesn't mean you have to give up your belief system and do everything that they want you to do. It means, just like, for instance, I don't know, who can I be? Okay, I won't name any names. I was thinking of, who can I say I follow or believe in that? But, you know, I don't want to stir controversy or get hate mail, because the way the world is so polarized these days. But let's say it's a political organization. There are some politicians that I really like, that I follow, that I think they're great, but I'm not going to do everything they say, and I don't agree with everything they do say. It's, I think, similar to that. If there is an alien civilization these people are talking to, it's interesting to keep tabs, to hear what they have to say. That doesn't mean you have to follow them religiously or anything, you know. Just use some discernment and be careful out there, people.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice. And, you know, like those type of people sort of prey on, you know, vulnerable people,
mm-hmm.
people that are, you know, I hate to say it, you know, that are damaged in some sort of way. And those are the ones that seem to really buy in at hook, line, and sinker. And I hope I'm not offending anyone out there by saying that, but that is what you see a lot of times. And I do feel like those people need to be protected the most of all, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it really is, you know, again, not naming any names, but I am going to name a name, you know, just I'm going to name a name of a person that someone was following that I recently talked to, and that's George Adamski, saying that he believed everything about him, everything that he believed in, saying that, you know, that people were living on other planets, you know, absolutely still buys it 100%, hook, line, and sinker. That, and when I questioned him on, you know, how could that be possible, and we know that these planets are barren and, you know, all that. Well, he says, well, they're a different level of consciousness. And I said, well, why would they hang out at a barren planet? And, you know, his answer was, well, they're attracted to planets for some reason. That part we don't know. You know, so there's, it, I don't care if it's certain religious or cults or anything like that. There's always answers. And there's answers to everything that, in, but it's all based on 100% of you believing something without evidence or proof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. It's all this faith-based thing. And, you know, the odds, the statistics are, my degree's in psychology, and this is an area that I think is really interesting, especially given the field that I work in. But there are experiments that have been done, and about 70% of the people is usually where these experiments come out to be, and there's some famous ones out there. But most people are followers. Most people are looking to an authoritative figure to kind of lead them and tell them what to do. And if you're of that 70%, and of course we all feel that we're not, but it's just important to be careful and be discerning and question everything and do your own thing and be your own person. It's just really important. And so you don't fall into some of these things. You know, evidence of the 70% are things like, look at Hitler and the Nazis, or, mm-hmm. you know, whole races following along with that, or any number of genocides that we've seen in the past. So, you know, just people need to be really careful and be discerning. And in this field in particular, I just see so much of it. Not that it's out there, you know, everywhere, but I just get worried because I see that in this field. And so many of the times we have found people to be deceptive, and it's unfortunate. And I do want to say, I'm not saying Greer is an evil person at all. I'm just saying that he is a human. He is fallible, and he's just someone. And maybe he would feel uncomfortable that people follow him to this level. I know I would if I were him. But there are some people that are like, you know, this person can do no wrong. Everything he says is absolute Bible, gospel. And, you know, they vehemently defend a lot of the stuff to where they get, I think, irrational and illogical, but they get mean. So I'm just telling people to be careful. I'm not disparaging anyone in particular, especially at least that badly.
Well, yet. Let's talk about, you know, Greer real quickly since
Uh-oh.
We're on the subject.
This is one of your topics.
No, that's okay. You know, on my show a couple of times I brought it up. You know, I did that karaoke spoof about him and stuff like that. But, you know, I brought it up a number of times. I had a guy that was writing blogs for me. He was very, very involved in every aspect of my podcast in the beginning. And, you know, he gave me one warning. He says, do not, I believe in Greer 100%. Greer is, you know, he's, you know, I don't understand why you'd possibly say anything you're saying like you did. And, you know, I argued with him, and, you know, I never saw anyone turn so quickly and violently, threatening and everything. And, you know, he's gone, of course, but, and I've never heard from him again. And there was someone he really, really admired that passed away, and I, you know, sent a note just kind of as handing out, you know, a olive leaf to him and olive branch or whatever you say, and you know, never heard back from him. And it was just, you know, people get irrational and violent when they when they're following someone and you challenge something about them, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's unfortunate. So, and that's all I'm saying. It's just dangerous. And I see this story, and I'm always afraid and fearful of this sort of stuff happening in our community because I see so much of this following going on.
Mm-hmm.
But let's get into some other UFO news other than what's in this news today. And we got kind of depressing there. And not to say that we won't again here in the show, but what is the story that you would like to discuss, my friend?
Well, there's, you know, there's talk out there. A lot of people are talking about this subject, of course, and that's about the Russian billionaire that bankrolls, you know,
yeah,
a new project for to listen to extraterrestrials. And, you know, I had someone on my show last week that, you know, kind of brought up, you know, a good and valid point. Now, I can't remember if we were actually live in the show when he said this, but he says, take a look at your cell phone right now. And I'm looking at my cell phone, and he goes, how long has a cell phone been around? And, you know, what's going to be next? What are we going to say is going to be next in 20 years and or 10 years even? Who knows? It might be something entirely different. And for us to look at the spectrum of radio signals, you know, is kind of along that line. You know, we have a there's a very narrow gauge of possibly, and I'm saying possibly, of when extraterrestrials would be using that type of technology, you know, as technology grows and advances. And for us to actually catch something, and for this guy to bankroll $100 million, you know, I have to say this, it's probably better than doing nothing. You know, still, you know, there's a lot of places $100 million could go. And, you know, if just 1 million of that 100 million would go into some type of science to investigate, you know, UFOs. I know they're fleeting and everything and hard to capture, but say in a hot spot or whatever it is, but if just like 1% of that 100 million could be dedicated to the search of what I really do believe is actually visiting here, you know, we'd probably find out much quicker. Just a personal opinion. But no, it's... Again, you know, I think it's better than doing nothing. When I talked with Seth Shostak from, you know, a couple of years ago, whatever, I actually said that to him, you know, that I, you know, I didn't exactly agree with what SETI is doing because of the technology and all that, but it is better than doing nothing. They're just shooting out there with, looking out there with technology that we're aware of. But I truly do believe that whatever technology is out there, it would be a rare coincidence that would be what we are looking for.
I agree with you so much. And I think people like Shostak in particular, I think he's a great guy, an interesting scientist. I really like his work and love to hear him talk. But I disagree. I think he's very has a very narrow view when it comes to and a lack of creativity when it comes to thinking about the future and technology. I mentioned this several times, but I asked, you know, Dr. Michio Kaku what he thought about, you know, the astronomers and how people like Shostak say over and over again that, you know, that the distances are too vast. And Michio Kaku says, well, what does he know? He's an astronomer. When Michio Kaku could say that because he's a theoretical physicist. And, you know, they theorize that there are ways to move vast distances more quickly. So it will be possible one day for us to do those sort of things. And I really feel that this, you know, listening to the radio signals, like you said, is another example of some really uncreative thinking when we're using the oldest technology we know of to communicate practically to listen to aliens. And in fact, when this story came out and I did my research to write my version of this story, I thought for sure, and I was really excited because I thought that this conversation would come up, that there had to be some of the scientists who would bring up how this spending so much money in this arena might be ill-advised because the listening to radio signals is controversial among astronomers and scientists, and some do from the beginning, from the very beginning, Sir Francis Drake, who's part of this project, and others had talked about, really, is this the best way to go? It's an old technology. But that conversation did not come up, unfortunately. But it did a little bit. And I really, my favorite story on this whole thing was a Forbes story, and I took some quotes. But I wanted to look for some of the, you know, quotes where people have said that this is kind of silly. And one of the biggest critics is a SETI guy, Paul Davies, who works on a bunch of stuff. Actually, you know, one of my favorite stories with Paul Davies is he wrote a story about discovering extraterrestrial civilizations and what that may entail. And this book is what Hillary Clinton is holding when she's has pictures of her with Lawrence Rockefeller. Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're talking. And of course, Lawrence Rockefeller was into UFOs. He's since passed away. But Davies had this. I found a New York Times story from just a couple of years ago where they summarized in Davies' book his view of the whole SETI thing. And I love their paragraph here. It says, he thinks that it's mildly batty to search for radio signals sent intentionally or not from what may be a very advanced civilization, he writes, because even Earth's own radio output is already beginning to fade. Radio signals are outdated technology, nearly as sun-bleached as an old issue of Omni magazine.
Yeah, that is a great quote.
It's a good quote, and they did on the Forbes magazine kind of bring this up a little bit, or at least about what a long shot it is to Martin Rees. And Martin Rees is actually a very famous astronomer in the UK. He ran the Royal Society, the scientific organization where they made this announcement about the Russian billionaire donating this $100 million to SETI and searching for aliens and listening to radio signals. And it was kind of funny because he does talk about what a long shot it is, but that he does think it's worthwhile. But he also debated a little bit because there's two parts to the project. One part is to listen. Another is a $1 million prize for people to come up with messages to send to aliens. Now, they don't really outline what is the criteria for this prize, who's going to win the prize and what. But they're not even going to send the messages to aliens. And they essentially cite because another person who's a big part of this project is Stephen Hawking. And Stephen Hawking is afraid that if we send out messages to aliens, there's going to be some big evil aliens that are going to be like, oh, what's this? Let's go, eat these people or do something bad to us. But Rees said he disagrees with that whole concept. He says, I suspect if aliens know we exist, they know we're already here. I don't think we should imagine any intelligence is like ours at all.
Yeah, and I really agree with all that.
I agree with that, you know, and there's been a debate in SETI. They call it METI, Messaging Extraterrestrial Intelligence. And there's a big debate in this because people have wanted SETI to do that. They have dabbled in it. I think Hawking's daughter even was involved with a project similar to this. And the debate is always, well, you know what, we're already sending out radio signals. We're like a radio signal speaker phone. So there's signals already out there. So somebody's going
to
find us.
We can't stop them all the way back to I Love Lucy or something, you know?
Yeah, aliens are watching I Love Lucy already. So,
Well, you know, it would be hard to, if you had to, it would only be guessing of what type of technology is out there. I mean, you know, really, you could get a super high powered telescope and look for smoke signals just as easy as if you ask me.
Yeah. And just one other thing I think is important about this story is just how much of a boost this is. So this guy who's a billionaire, and he mostly made his money in the Silicon Valley in California. So, I mean, in technology projects, he's a venture capitalist guy there. He's donated $100 million that will be released over 10 years. So SETI can use telescopes such as two of the biggest out there. And we talk more about it in our story. But before this, the biggest contribution was from Paul Allen, who spent $30 million for the Allen Array, which unfortunately SETI ran out of money to even run once they got that built. The right. Second biggest donation was $800,000 from the John Templeton Foundation in 2013. And then NASA gave SETI $600,000. So $100 million is a huge boost in their budget for doing this. So they're going to be a big deal going forward. But the other thing, sorry, I love this topic, but is SETI, I always say, is a perfect example of a fringe science that became mainstream. And I'm always looking for, and I've always tried, it's difficult though, and is to organize. I think there's room for a SETI of UFOs. People used to think that talking to extraterrestrials was silly, but as astrobiology has become more and more prominent and looking for aliens and seemingly, you know, we seem to be on the cusp of finding at least evidence of alien life because there are so many worlds like ours and we're finding water everywhere. You know, we're probably, it's possible, if not probable, we're going to find a microbe on Mars, maybe even the moon soon. So it became mainstream because they had scientists, you know, speaking to this and working towards it, and it became mainstream. They were very careful about what they did and how, and they worked inside of the bounds of science, and that was really important, and there's room for that in UFOs. And people say, why doesn't this happen? There are scientists interested in UFOs, but there hasn't been this organized effort like SETI. And if there was an organization that would take this on, I think that it would get more recognition. It would be bring credibility to the field. And I hope it happens one day. A lot of organizations, and I know this happens with MUFON, which is really unfortunate. MUFON's mission is to be a scientific organization. But then, you know, there's so many people that pull it into other areas, wanting to look into abduction, wanting them to look into this or that, and all of these wild and fringe and silly things that or things that aren't necessarily silly but not scientific, and things that aren't that are based highly speculative as instead of based off of hard science. And so MUFON hasn't been able to be that organization, but I hope someone does, because sure, if you're very careful, it may be a little dry and you focus on the science and the evidence, you might not get that wide populist group as interested, but you're going to get more of the science-minded people interested, and you're going to grow a community of those sort of people. And the media likes to cover credible stuff when it comes to UFOs. They really do. I know this for a fact. Look at Leslie Kane or some of these others and how much press they get. Look at Robert Hastings. He has a CNN broadcasting, you know, his testimony from military witnesses talking about UFOs. There are people. There, media likes to cover credible info. We just got to give it to them. Too often, we hand them silly stuff instead of credible stuff, and they'll cover the silly if you don't give them something credible to cover. So,
yeah. Well, thank goodness the alien slide back in May 5th didn't have all that coverage. That would have been a disaster. Now, one of the things that comes to mind, well, there is CSETI. I'm just joking. But one of the things that comes to mind, say this Russian, you know, billionaire donates the $100 million, $10 million a year. They get into year two or three, all of a sudden they actually discover life. Is he going to withdraw his money?
Oh, that would be nice for him. He wouldn't have to give him any more money.
He wouldn't have to deal with it, yeah.
Well, I think the project is, and I think that's why they have this second round of the project, is it almost sounds very positive. They're thinking ahead as to what are we going to do when we do get a signal. Are we going to send another signal back? How are we going to translate this signal? You know, there are these secret, these declassified files from the NSA, And in the 60s, there was a famous cryptology expert who was working on this, who was working on how do we decipher alien projects and or signals. And he had in his classes some exercises on how to decipher alien signals. Unfortunately, this field being what it is, a lot of people have mistranslated those documents and said, oh, look, this is proof the NSA had an alien signal in the past and they tried to decipher it. No, those were exercises on how to decipher them if we find them. And this was because this is the beginning of SETI, when SETI was starting and what they would do. So there is thoughts about what to do. And in fact, Paul Davies is part of the what's called the post-detection team at SETI. So it's partially his job to figure out, okay, what do we do if we do get an alien signal? And so that would be the next question. And I'm sure these funds will be helpful to figure out what that next step will be, because I'm sure they'll get a lot of people together to figure this out. But by then, I don't think funding's going to be a problem. If they get a real signal they can verify is from an extraterrestrial intelligence, there's probably going to be a lot of money thrown at the topic. And who knows? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people feel that it will go into black projects, or it'll become very secretive and we won't be in the know on what happens. But I don't know. It's an interesting problem for a government to have, because let's say you are working at the White House when this happens. What would you do? I don't know. What do you think, Martin? What do you, if you were in charge of how to manage something like that?
Well, personally, I think that I think we're ready for the most part, because, you know, there's so much awareness out there, you know, like this Earth twin that was just found. You know, it's 1.6 times the size of Earth, but very 14,000 light years away. But very likely it could be harboring life. I think that a majority of the population, or I would say a majority of at least the U.S. and some other countries, probably are ready any time now that, you know, are aware that at any moment we could discover that there's life out there through some type of means. So I think that, you know, as before, I would say that we probably weren't ready, say, back in the Roswell days in 1947 or whatever, and during the Cold War, possibly we weren't ready. But we have, you know, the major religious factions, like the Catholic religion is more accepting that extraterrestrial life exists, and, you know, they're explaining, you know, what they feel about that, and you know, I think they wanted to baptize them or something. But anyway, the bottom line is, I think now more than ever, we are ready to accept the fact that that something can be found out there, and I don't think there's going to be any panic. I don't think there's going to be any changes in the economy or anything like that. I really think that unless something is like attacking us, that it's just going to be accepted, and, you know, it'll turn into old news, which I think is kind of sad. But that's kind of what I think the direction of the whole thing would go. How do you feel? What do you think would happen?
I think you're exactly right. It's really funny because I remember this anime. I like to watch the Japanese cartoons sometimes because I think it's the best sci-fi. Talk about thinking out of the box and being creative. It's wild, crazy stuff sometimes. But it's so interesting. There's this one where it is revealed. Like, you know, it's kind of a comedy, but it is funny in that, you know, there's this fight between these two robots, and the news is like, alien life has been discovered. There is extraterrestrial life, and they were seen over the ocean, and everybody's like, eh, big deal. You know, it's just like any other news story. They're just eh, and they all go on to live their lives, and nobody really cares. And I think you're right. I think it would be an interesting story. And then people would move on. Even in the case, now that I think about it, let's say the signal says, prepare to be conquered. We are coming in 20 years and we're going to take you over. I think there would be some talk, but otherwise people would be like, do you think it's really going to happen? I don't know. Oh, well, 20 years from now, I'm going to work. Yeah, we'll put it on the calendar. It's someone else's problem. And just go on with life, you know. The clubs will be full. Everybody will be hanging out, doing whatever they do. And I think you're right that there'll be just a lot of life as usual.
There'd be a lot of credit card spending just before then, though.
Yeah, right before then, there'll probably be a lot of credit card spending, a lot of people doing what they want to do for the last moments in life.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. No, it is. It is. It is really interesting. It's another thing about psychology. People have very busy lives today.
Yeah, they do. And I mean, I'd look at some of the big stories, 9/11, a lot of people were just back to work the next day, didn't think anything of it. A lot of the big stories are like that, or big events that take place. In fact, you know, a lot of, you know, I'm a news hound, so I'm always listening to the news. But so many of the large world events that happen, when you go to ask people about it, they're like, I don't know, I don't pay attention. So people just have their lives to live. I think, you know, a lot of people get frustrated in this field. We need answers. We need truth. Why aren't people freaking out? But I think even if people believe in UFOs, they're kind of like, well, that's really interesting, but I've got my life to live. You know, I'm too busy to go to a conference, or I'll look at stuff on the web sometimes, but I got my life to live.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
In fact, I think the majority of people really are think that it's interesting and may even think that we're being visited by extraterrestrial intelligence right now. And they're just like, hey, that's kind of neat. They obviously don't want to show themselves or be involved in my life, so I'm just going to move on.
Yeah, I think the fact that, you know, you don't hear of them attacking us, or there's no, you know, there's no threat to life, I think that is probably like people could just, the people that accept it, you know, are just having that in mind, that, well, what's it going to affect in my life? You know, no one's getting hurt or anything. I have no threat here. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I hear you, brother. So yeah. Another story. This is really cool because this story, moving on, is something that we posted recently. And it's caught. I know this guy's going to be really excited. It's really caught on. The Daily Express wrote a long story on this one. And I know Lee Spiegel of the Huffington Post is writing one. He might have already posted it. He's posting it sometime today. But this is this UFO video that was sent to me from a guy here in Tucson, just south of us. It's like an hour and a half south of where I am now. And on July 4th, this guy and his buddy took their night vision out to the mountains, and they were looking for UFOs because that's what these guys do. This guy is named Tom Sanger, and his name is his friend's name is Glenn Campbell. But they were filming, and they spotted a weird light. It's these weird lights in the distance, and they filmed them for about 20 minutes. Then they disappeared. I guess about 15 minutes later, they did reappear again. They were using two night vision scopes that they got these on. One of them is a color night vision, which is kind of cool because you don't see that very much these
right.
days. We'll probably see more of it. But it's really cool, cool system. I mean, it looks great. So it's a color, so you can see color in the lights, and they do seem to change colors. The black and white system, of course, are not changing colors. What else is cool about the color system, it's a higher resolution, so there's less of the sprinkling, you know, that happens in night
right.
vision. And
mm-hmm.
also, like, these were three separate lights, and you can see them as three separate lights, whereas in the black and white, more traditional system, they look like one light because the lights are so intense. But this thing is just sitting there, you know, blinking and changing colors, kind of maybe even looking like it's changing shape a little bit. It's really weird. So he also went and took some daylight pictures and posted, or at least sent me the video for that. So I posted pictures of what the area looks like in the day. Now, it looks like the angle on the daylight pictures is a little different. But if he is correct and these lights are over the ridge he believes, or the peak that he believes they are over, then it looks like they were above the mountains and somewhere further out towards the desert where there's nothing. You know, so that's what's really strange. They don't necessarily look like aircraft. Having been started with MUFON in Colorado, where there are a lot of mountains, often people will take you know, when it's dark, you can't see where the mountains are. And there'll be cars driving on the mountains. And
Oh,
the
yeah.
mountains are tall. And, you know, you just don't realize that it's such an extreme angle. And there'll be cars moving on the mountains. And I've gotten so many videos that were cars on the mountainside. But if he's right, and I think he is, then these weren't cars on the mountainside. These are above the mountain. If he's right, I would like to see a picture that is closer to the exact angle that the original videos are in. But really interesting videos. So the Daily Express must have thought they were interesting, and so did Lee. So he's posting those as well. But yeah, really interesting. And what's cool about this is this guy, Tom Sanger, sent me these videos a couple weeks ago, well, right after the 4th. And I sent him, we had some conversation back and forth. I asked him some questions and he answered because I thought, wow, these images are really interesting. And so I was going to write about them and put the video up. And it got really busy. I ended up going to, you know, Vegas to see Ruben Uriarte and Noe Torres do a talk out there. And I just got really busy and I forgot. And he emailed me and he said, hey, did you forget? And I had told him to bug me because I didn't want to forget writing about this. And I said, yeah, I'm sorry, you know, let me get on this. So I did finally write this story. And he was surprised. He's like, I thought you were going to just post the videos. I didn't know you were going to write a big, long story about them. But, of course, that's what we do. We write stories. We don't just post videos. So I said, yeah, no problem. So he was excited. He was so excited that he even got a story. And now I'm sure he's going to be ecstatic that the Daily Express has picked him up. Huffington Post is going to pick this up. There's some fun videos. Did you happen to get a look at them?
No, I didn't look at the video. I just saw this just now. But I do want to say one thing on the YouTube video. It shows January 1st, 2011 for a date. Do you think that's just like the way the camera is formatted or something?
Yeah, this is hilarious because this is how my camera is. The dates, I don't know how it is for you, but the dates, I know you can go in the setting and you can turn off the dates so you don't get a timestamp. That's what I always do. And that's what's stupid about technology and our cameras, I think. It's so tedious. Luckily, your phone, you don't have to set the date and the time. But it's so tedious to set the date and the time on your cameras every time you put in a new battery and you turn it on that nobody ever does it. I never do it. Do you?
No, I would never bother to do anything like that.
Yeah, well, nobody does. So that's what they said. They said the timestamps are wrong because they never bothered to go change those and set them correctly. So that's why they're wrong. I think in the future, because no doubt they're going to get a lot of feedback about that, in the future they'll probably do that. But they said, like me, you know, they don't go through tediously setting the date and time every time you turn on your damn camera.
Right. Now, so I've been watching, turn the volume off, and I've been watching this. It really is something else. Very interesting video, and it doesn't appear to be it appears to be in the skyline, not on a mountaintop. You can clearly see the ridge of the mountain, unless it's a far distant mountain that you cannot see, you know, which is possible. But
yeah, and looking at the daylight photos, it doesn't look like there are any mountains beyond that. And, you know, the mountains in that area aren't that tall. Coming from mm-hmm. Colorado, of course, that's me saying that, but desert people in Tucson might feel differently. But, you know, the angles look fairly correctly. I didn't put it here, and maybe I should have. I was going to make a GIF where I put the two pictures on top of each other and played with the opacity so I can mm-hmm. see, you know, where the light was, and it appears the light, you know, matching up as closely as I could, was above the ridge line. So, more people will take a look at this, and maybe there'll be some more information. Maybe someone will discover something different. But so far, it's looking pretty good. It's a very interesting video. And, you know, the other thing with cars that are in the forest, or you see them moving. So you'll see them moving from left to right as they blink on and off, or right to left or something. These are just staying still.
Now, the only other time you could think of something like that happening is if a A plane is coming in with with their landing lights, and they're coming toward you. It kind of looks like it's just sitting still. But I wouldn't think that there'd be any, you know, landing strip near in that mountainous area.
Yeah. Now, behind these gentlemen, see, and if they were where they said they were, at this parking lot and near this canyon, the north to the northeast is all the wilderness area where the hills are. And then behind them to the south and southeast is all desert and Tucson. Behind them is an airport and is Mothan Davis Air Force Base, which is where they actually do a lot of the drone strikes. That's where they control the predators. Mm. So there's training there, but also they are remotely controlling the drone strikes in the Middle East from this base here in Arizona.
I've heard about that.
Mm-hmm. But that's to the south. So, and these guys were shooting to the north and northeast. And because they're shooting mountains, that lends to the credibility, or that they are shooting to the north because the mountains are to the north of Tucson. So assuming they were in Tucson and they're not lying to us, and I don't think they are, they seem very honest. And, another one of the videos he posted just for in the past is, it must have been right when he got his night vision thing, is some jets flying by. So I put that video up too for comparison, but, these guys seem like, honest guys. I believe them. It could be a case of mistaken identity, but thus far it's looking pretty good. It's looking very interesting.
Now, that technology that Ben Hansen, NVOps, the stuff he deals in, are any of the pieces that he uses or sells color like this one? This is really great.
Yeah, it's really cool. They're not color that I have seen. I'm sure he does have color. I don't remember seeing him using one. He always comes, and he'll come to the UFO Congress again this year to do a sky watch with some of his night vision equipment. But I don't remember him bringing a color one like this. It could be pretty new. So I did ask Ben about these videos, unfortunately, and I did talk to him actually a couple days ago, and I forgot to ask him to respond to my email, but I didn't get his email back in time to add something to the story. Hopefully Lee, when he posts his story, maybe got a hold of someone who did some more analysis, but I was talking to Lee recently, and he felt that it was very interesting and should have his story up soon.
Great.
Yeah, it's a cool video there, huh, buddy?
You betcha.
Did we talk about on our show before these Arctic UFOs?
Yes.
We already did.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I don't think there's anything new there except for there's a couple new things. Actually, I did want to talk about regarding this in another story we have talked about in the past, and that is that I was able to interview John Greenwald, and we just posted this on Friday on YouTube, our Open Mind UFO report, and I talked to John Greenwald about this case, and John Greenwald is very certain that these photos are of test balloons and that this is a weapons test in these photos. But what's interesting about this, he makes a good point. So these photos, which look legit, they look like real pictures and not photoshopped, seem to be photos of, you know, balloons being fired upon by a submarine. In the photos, in the periphery of some of them, it does say USS Trepang. However, and to, you know, their anonymous source had said that this sub was on the Trepang, and these pictures were taken in March of 1971 in the Arctic, and that these two gentlemen were on board with some great research. You know, the Greenwald and crew were able to track down Alex Mistretta and Steve Marola were the other two. They tracked down these two gentlemen who said, no, we didn't see that. I don't know what that is. But here's John Greenwald's question is, if these are just weapons tests, it seems like they would be able to know that. They would be able to identify what they are. And it's weird that the images do show Trepang on them. So that's one of the mysteries he says is still out there. He does believe they're weapon tests, but he doesn't know why those guys weren't able to identify it, especially if these pictures were taken on the Trepang. I guess it could be they were taken before these two gentlemen were on board the Trepang. The
Right.
dates are just wrong. So there's possible answers, but that's
Yeah,
one
that's
of
the only
the.
thing that really makes sense is the date.
Yeah, and I think some of people have pointed out where some of the shapes don't look similar, but some people have also posted, what a mirage looks like on the ocean. And I think some of this is due to that. I know there's a technical term where when you're on the ocean, due to the refraction of the sun, you can actually see a mirage from over the horizon.
Yes, sometimes something will look like something floating in the air when it's like a boat or something. That really does happen. I've seen that.
Yeah, that's amazing. So that's where, they think that that might have been. I've seen that too, and I'm hopefully going to see it again because I'm going back to the beach, baby.
All right. No, I've seen like an island floating before. You know, I mean, it
Oh, how
just looks like it.
cool. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
must
pretty
be
cool stuff.
extraterrestrial for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, so that's really interesting. And then on the previous UFO report, I don't know if I mentioned this, we did interview Nick Pope, and that was a lot
Yes.
of fun because, and I guess I just wanted to talk to you about this. It's really interesting that Nick Pope, the spin and dirty tricks is what he calls it, where they make fun of the UFO stories so that the media will stop talking about them and stop thinking of them as credible. Essentially, even though they do think of them as credible.
Yep, it's another disinformation type of conflict they're trying to cause there.
So, I don't know that our government so much does that, but the media certainly does a good job of making fun of stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's see. That's a lot of the news. Otherwise, I don't know if we talked about. Did we talk about? Yeah, I think we've talked about all of these stories. Is there any other story you wanted to talk about?
No, I know. Yeah, quickly, why don't we just
Yeah.
talk about one more if we can here?
Yeah, let's do it.
And that is it was back in January actually that this happened, but it was recently reported. And I think one of the main reasons I want to talk about it is because something you mentioned the last time we spoke, and that is how much Hangar One is getting people to report things. And I watched a little bit of Hangar One, and I thought it was actually pretty good. I know that some things have not been really accurate. I saw something that I knew for sure was not really accurate, but I think it's well done, and I think there's good awareness in it. So I'm all for it. Now this was a case happened back in January, but it was reported recently again because of Hangar One, where this Tennessee teen reports a low-flying UFOs and an ape-like creature. Now, it sounds when you hear it's teens and their age, 14, with this 12-year-old brother, and there's snowfall and they see a triangle and all that. Then you hear them talking about the ape and all that. First thing you think it's kind of a prank, but it's possible. I don't know how far MUFON looks into a situation like this, but I mean, it's definitely not something you would hear over and over again. So maybe this ape-like thing is possibly something they saw.
Yeah, this is an interesting story. 14 and a 12-year-old, it happened in January. They saw three lights floating. The object said they didn't make any sound, that stayed 50 yards away and it circled them, they said. And this was for about 10 minutes. And then after that, they saw a black ape-like creature looking at them. This brother got freaked out and yelled at him, and they ran away essentially, and they went to go tell someone, but the thing was gone, sort of thing. So I don't know. Yeah, a lot of the replies we've been getting since we posted that story are, oh, not very convincing. You know, these are just teens, you know, red flag when it's teenagers posting something. Were they sniffing glue?
Nice comments.
Someone said he thinks that these are two pimple-pocked glue sniffers. And it's kind of sad, you know, having been a teenage boy, and I don't know what kind of teen you were, if you were a little a-hole, which is okay. Lots of teens are. And I was occasionally, I suppose. But I wasn't a liar. I was a very honest person. And that would be pretty hurtful, you know, if you're like, especially as a 14 or 12-year-old and you experience something extraordinary and tell people about it, and they just call you a pimple-pocked glue sniffer and and make fun of you. So that is unfortunate. And you know who had a really amazing encounter with his brother as a youth was Jan Harzan. Have you heard that story?
No.
Okay, I've interviewed him, and we've got it on YouTube, and we've got it in on our podcast here. But it's been a while, but you should get him on your show because it's an amazing experience, and it's the reason he got kind of like Ron Regeer, you know, who I interviewed recently, who got into technology or into the defense and technology field because of UFO experiences. And Jan got into this whole thing because of this amazing UFO sighting that him and his brother had, essentially where there's this thing floating in the black yard, and he tells the story great. I mean, it's fascinating when he tells the story. And, you know, it had disappeared, but it really had a big effect on him and his brother and their lives. But that's a case where I believe Jan. I think he really did see something. I've known Jan for a long time. Of course, Jan Harzan, for those I should have mentioned, is the director of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON. You can see him on Hangar One frequently. But yeah, it's a really, really interesting story, and I can only imagine these days with social media, if they would have posted their story or told someone about it and got attacked like this, maybe they would have never talked about it again, and it would have caused them not to get into this field because it's so, you know, you get so much hate mail when you just are trying to share something. Sad.
Absolutely.
Yeah. They may be, do you think, then again, they may be pimple poppers and they may have been sniffing glue, but hopefully not.
Yeah. We can give, you know, I mean, that's the thing, you know, I mean, just because they're young at an age where, yes, there is a lot of mischief going on, everything's changing and, you know, for physically, mm-hmm. and you have a lot of, you know, weird things going on in your life or whatever, but, you know, give them the benefit of the doubt. This could have really happened.
Yeah. I mean, remember what you were like as a kid at that time. And maybe some of these people who are being jerky about it were total a-holes when they were that old. But, you know, there's lots of really good teens out there who are really cool, honest kids. And some of them are just amazingly brilliant and really cool people. So so don't be so mean, people. Come on. Have a heart.
Yeah.
They're children, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I guess that's it for our show for today, huh?
That's it. I'm about ready to crawl back into my shell.
Okay.
Being a tortoise, you know.
Yeah,
reptilian.
Little tortoise guy. Hey, well, I'm going to do the close.
Okay.
Why don't you hang out for the close?
Sure.
You can make commentary if you want. Maybe I'll ask you for clarification on anything.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So here we go. But thank you to our guest, Martin Willis. Not so much a guest, but our co-host and our news correspondent buddy guy. And don't forget to check out his show, Podcast UFO, which is on Wednesdays. And it's on the Dark Matter Digital Network, the same network that Art Bell is on. It's kind of a network created to host Art Bell. And Art Bell's back on the air. And have you heard much about that? Is that going well?
Oh, it's going really well. Mm-hmm. Sound quality is really good. And not only that, I have a huge amount of listeners live now because of that.
Oh, really? Well, that's really cool. So that has helped. And hopefully we didn't get bumped. I don't know if he's playing. He was playing our show on there, too.
But, no, he's still on.
Oh, good, good. Yep. So you can check out Martin and I on that. But, Martin, you can also go to podcastufo.com, right?
That's right.
All right, so check that out. I also want to thank the guy who does the music. I love our open and closed music. It's done by Caleb Hanks. He's a really interesting guy. Have you ever met Caleb, Martin?
No, I don't think so.
Guy's hilarious, but he's extremely talented. He does this musical. He's got music. He's got a website called The Clerk Chronicles. You can find it on the radio page at openminds.tv. But he not only does music, he has this futuristic comic book that he does. He's an amazing, artist. He writes. Mm-hmm. You've seen it?
No, I know who he is. I think we've had email exchange.
Oh, yeah. Cool guy. Really cool guy. Mm-hmm. So I'm just a big fan of all this stuff that he does. So you'll have to check out his work. But also, like I mentioned, at openminds.tv, you're going to see some new Open Minds UFO reports. These are our video news things that we do for YouTube. Of course, we try to keep those short. We also have a short interview from people who are pertinent to the story. So luckily, we've been able to get interviews with the people who are in the middle of these very important stories, such as Nick Pope, who used to work for the Ministry of Defense investigating UFOs, and John Greenwald, who hosts the very popular site The Black Vault. John Greenwald again, and we've got more stories because John Greenwald is one of these gifts that keeps on giving. He does all of these Freedom of Information Act requests, and he's always getting amazing information and people getting him some amazing stuff. So we've got more stories on the horizon from John Greenwald of some great work that he's doing. He is, I'll announce this. This is the first speaker I've announced for the Congress. He will be speaking at the UFO Congress this year in 2016. I think that's the first speaker I've mentioned, but we'll have more posted soon. But the UFO Congress in 2016 is going to be really cool. We're going to be putting out the names really soon here. I just want to confirm a few more before we get them out there, but it's going to be really, really cool. This is cool. I'll share this with you. We're going to have like some PhDs, some that worked at or got their degrees from MIT, from Harvard. One of the Harvard guys is a professor. He wasn't a professor. He got his degree at Harvard in sociology. This is one of the guys who's not a professor. His name is Ron Westrum. But what's really cool about this guy, yeah, you've met him. Really neat about this guy is he's worked in the defense and aerospace industry. He's a big deal because he helps to organize these corporations and organizations. So he's well known throughout that industry, and he's not afraid to say he believes in UFOs. He thinks there really is something to this phenomena. And his talk is fascinating because he talks about hidden events. So in other words, he talks about how in the past, things like meteorites, people didn't believe in them. They didn't think they existed. They thought it was ridiculous. Obviously, they're real. This was a phenomena that was anecdotal. It was witnesses reporting to see something, but they couldn't prove it because it's just a flash of light. You know, how do you prove that? Mm-hmm. Well, over time, of course, we did prove that meteorites are real. He goes over other cases such as this, but he examines how society and science dealt with those phenomena, which many believed were not real, who were skeptical of their existence until they were proven to be real. And he draws the parallel of how right now we're going through this thing where some people don't believe that there are UFOs exist or there is anything to the UFO mystery, and how we're going through this process of eventually, the whole topic getting more credibility and acceptance. So really interesting, it's academic, but it's not dry, and I think it's really important, really cool stuff, but that's another one. So there you go, a couple tidbits from the UFO Congress for this year. I'll give you one more, in fact, and this is really cool. The citizens' hearing on UFOs, of course, this is where the citizen hearing organization, often kind of the figurehead for this is Steve Bassett, brought a lot of people to Washington, D.C. They did these mock hearings, and they got previous people who were Congress people to be on this panel to listen to evidence and then to determine, kind of get some feedback and to question these guys. We're going to have one of these senators at the conference, and his name is Merrill Cook. And he's going to speak about how when he came into this whole thing, these guys were paid, you know, to come and sit there for a week and listen to this stuff. And how he came into it very skeptical about UFOs, kind of not into the topic. And how he listened to this testimony and he was floored. And now he really believes there's something to all of this, and that it was an incredible experience. He's going to talk about his experience, what he heard, and why. And that's pretty cool. This is the first, I think, former congressman we've had at the UFO Congress, which is fitting, of course, because it's the UFO Congress. So this is going to be really exciting. I'm really excited about this. He's going to do a lecture. He's probably going to participate in a panel. He'll be there the whole time to take questions and to meet with people. We're going to have more people involved with the citizen hearing at the Congress, because it wasn't just Steve Bassett who put this on. It was others as well. They're going to be talking about some of the highlights and some of the best of from the citizen hearing. So this is going to be really exciting. At the Congress, too. So it's going to be a lot of fun. You can go to openminds.tv or ufocongress.com to register. Oh, I'm glad I remembered this, too, because I want to tell people, go save your hotel rooms right now. Each year, the Congress gets bigger and bigger. We sell tickets earlier and earlier, and we sell out of rooms at the host hotel earlier and earlier every year. So even if you haven't bought your tickets yet, go reserve your room if you want to come so you can make sure you have a room. I mean, I don't think you even have to put down a deposit or anything. You just reserve the room so you can be sure you've got one at the host hotel, because those rooms are going quickly, and we're going to book that hotel much quicker than we ever have. This year. We haven't even gotten all the speaker names out, and it's already going to be booked up. So be sure and do that as soon as possible. It's going to be a lot of fun. Also, if you want to keep up to speed, this is something new that we're doing. We have our Open Mind UFO newsletter. So this is an email that we're sending out on a bi-weekly basis to let you know what's going on with the UFO report, what's going on with the podcast, the Congress, and with the website. So we keep you up to date on everything going on this email newsletter. So go sign up for that. You can go to our website, and you'll see in the upper right-hand corner, there's a sign up for that. You can also email us at contact to get signed up for that. So there's everything going on, everybody. Thanks again, Martin, for hanging out with me.
Absolute pleasure.
And we'll talk to you all soon. Oh, we won't have a show next week because I'm going to be on the beach in San Diego. And right now I can feel bad about, you know, not having a show, because I always hear from people, why aren't you having a show? Have a show. Come on, man. But I'm going to be on the beach, and I'm not going to feel guilty at all hanging out on the beach.
Well, you have a great time, man.
Thanks, brother. I will. Yeah. So you all have a wonderful week, though, and we will talk to you soon. Adios, muchachos.